Hello, I am Rosari Griffin and this is an interview with Peter Flynn from IT Services UCC. And we are going to discuss computing support, email, the web and the electronic documents.
And everybody wanted to get their information into a form that they could publish it and tell the world about it. There was an enormous amount of effort went into preparing the background for that.
Of the networking of the webs throughout the world and for all the universities to be interconnected with each other. But I'm just wondering, in terms of your own role, how did you see it progress, I suppose, from your own job point of view? What was the next big hurdle to overcome?
I think the next hurdle to overcome is not so much a computing one as a small p political one, in that the publishers now have a stranglehold on the information that researchers need to do their job. And whilst up until now libraries have paid vast sums of money for access to papers, it's becoming less and less affordable, and that means that people increasingly can't get at copies of the information that they need for review or for research. And I think this is going to come to a crunch, and I wouldn't be surprised to see in 2 or 3 years' time the efforts of people like Peter Murray Rust in extracting information from databases of published information, papers basically, to become much more important, because without it, I mean, this is information, this is the lifeblood of research, and without it people can't do their job. And at the moment it's all under lock and key, and the key has been kept by large companies who are charging quite stupendously unaffordable amounts for it, which is a shame.
Yeah, that's surprising given that there's so much available. I thought the whole movement of late was for free and open access to...
Some areas have been extremely successful. Physics has been one of the most successful ones. They said, look, we need to get at this stuff quickly because it changes. I mean, a paper is out of date in physics in 5 minutes. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. But they said, you know, we need to put preprints up, and the publisher said, oh, no, you can't possibly do that, we'll go out of business. And the physicists said, just watch us. And they did, and the publisher said, oh, yeah, right, okay. And then the publisher just folded and said, yeah, that works fine. And surprise, surprise, what happens when you make the information available? Subscriptions to the journals go up, not down, astonishingly.
Yes, that is quite amazing, and it's encouraging.
The publishers, unfortunately, are living in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
They think that research is still done by gentlemen with long beards and wigs.
Yes.
And really, really haven't come up to date. And I think academics are going to have to be able to force them to do that.
That is a common problem, all right. Mm-hmm. And lastly, Peter, I'd like to know your thoughts on things like open access learning in terms of MOOCs, for instance, massive open online courses, and Coursera, which is another, and edX,
yeah,
and all of those, where you can go online and do a course for free. Now, obviously, if you want to get paid or a certificate of attendance, you pay a certain amount, or if you want to get accreditation, you pay a certain amount. But this was all initiated for the benefit of developing countries, although now we see that it's mostly developed countries, so-called developed countries, that are benefiting from these MOOCs and open free courses. But what are your thoughts on it?
I was very interested. I taught at the Developing Countries Workshop in Stanford in the early 90s, and it was clear then that huge numbers of countries outside the sort of Western industrialized bloc wanted to use the web to get at academic information in order to do teaching with. And there have been some fantastic strides made in doing this, and UCC has made quite a lot of them. I think it has to work that way. Whatever about the current problems with viruses, people do want to be able to learn at their own pace, in their own circumstances. It's all very well for people who are, as it should be said, young and unattached, straight out of school, can corral together and go to a university and learn. But there's so many people wanting to do this in other forms. I think it's fantastic that places like UCC have managed to develop courses that can be taken this way, but the effort involved in doing so is enormous. I've seen the people who are working in your area, where that you have a course which has traditionally been taught on paper and in a lecture theatre,
mm-hmm.
the effort involved to get that into a form that you can deliver it over the network is really significant. I don't think at the start of it anybody appreciated it. UCC was doing this way back in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. There was a set of remedial lectures in chemistry that was produced using a PC system that was around in those days. And so there was quite a lot of effort went on into that, and then the efforts of what was the teaching development unit at the time.
Yes.
To get people to do stuff in different ways. There was quite a lot of resistance from some people saying, oh, well, you know, this will never take off. We'll mm-hmm. always be using paper, and we'll always be standing up in front of people and teaching them. But the world changed. The world moved on.
And of course, we see now more than ever, as a result of COVID, that whether people like it or not, they've actually had to put their courses yeah. online. And in fact, there's been a whole sea change in third level, and people are not really in a position to resist, and therefore had to embrace the technology.
I'm hoping that this is going to end up being a very welcome shot in the arm for online teaching and learning, because it's been necessary, people have suddenly had to develop an awful lot of stuff that they either hadn't looked at before, or they'd sort of seen and said, yep, that's going to be useful one day, and put it on the shelf, and suddenly it had to be dusted off and brought to the fore again. And I think the developments in the last 3 months will probably stand everybody in very good stead for the future, because we will have learned by doing it by force, if you like, and getting it right. And I think what I've seen has been very successful. I'm sure there have been some false starts as well. But I think it's been very good.
Yes, and I agree with you. I think and I believe that a lot of good will come out of this COVID-19, notwithstanding the terrible impact it's had on society in some ways. But in other ways, I think from the environmental point of view, and also perhaps quality of life in terms of the work-life balance might improve as a result as well.
Yes, I think if you are in a position where you literally can't attend, whether it's because of the virus or whether for other reasons, I think you're very likely to look at the idea of doing it online with a very flexible approach. If you have always considered that it ought to be done in a lecture theatre or on paper, then I think it probably takes a little bit more effort to realize that it works online. I think it's very much up to the universities to make sure that that transition is smooth. I mean, it's obviously had to be a rough ride in the last 3 months, but I think in future it's going to have to be done with a greater degree of clarity, that people mm-hmm. who approach this are going to be able to see, oh, well, all I need is a computer and a connection and I can do this. But you've got to allocate time for it. You've got to have a place where you can do it in reasonable amount of peace and quiet. And there's a whole environmental background to doing the learning online from the student's point of view, whatever about from the academic's point of view in delivering it.
Indeed.
And yes. Probably we're not yet at a stage where everybody can simply snap their fingers and say, yes, I can do that. There's a lot of people out there who still have horrendously slow connections to the internet.
Yes.
And it's important that institutions who provide the stuff don't provide it only for the benefit of people with fast connections.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be done with a certain degree of care and attention, which I think it is being done, but the initial rush was to say, oh, well, it doesn't matter, we'll just get it working for all these people, and forgetting about the others who were left behind.
Yes, in terms
we're
of...
getting there.
We are, in terms of the digital divide that you're mentioning, and the fact that, as you said, some people might be less advantaged than others, and not, or even not be in good areas of good broadband reception in order to be able to do the course successfully. So, indeed, I'm sure, I hope all these things will iron out in due course.
I'm sure they will.
Peter, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for speaking to me.
You've had a very interesting career, and especially because I suppose your career really was at the cutting edge of development, essentially, in terms of computing and the digital world.
It's been a very interesting period to do this in. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And I'm sure it'll continue that way, and I've no doubt you'll continue to remain very busy in retirement. So thank you so
I'm
much.
Sure I shall.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And there you are listening to Mr. Peter Flynn, who's a retired IT services person from UCC. And this interview can be listened to on www.cry104fm.com. Go to podcasts and click on Dr. Rosario Griffin Presenter Podcasts.